to the top of the hour with Kokomo. Or is that the other way around? But anyway, you're listening to Smooth, Relaxing, and Easy. Stay with us for hour number two, won't you?
The second deadliest cancer in men and women could be prevented. Would you try to avoid the pain? And what if you could protect yourself without leaving your home? Colorectal cancer is highly preventable. Screening is important, safe, and most people have options. Ask your doctor which screening test is right for you. Learn more from the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at getscreened.org.
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to pa@wrct.org.
This is Aubriana Bench with WRCT Pittsburgh. This is the show Forbes Avenue. Today I'm joined by Colin Mockery and Asad Mekki. You guys may know Colin from his experience as an improv comedian on Whose Line Is It Anyways? Colin, I actually watched this show growing up all the time with my brothers.
I'm sure since you were a fetus, you heard it from the walls of the womb.
Yeah, it was I loved it so much. I gotta say, you were my favorite. Don't tell Ryan or Wayne. Anyways. And then we have Asad Mekki, a world-renowned hypnotist who's performed for millions. And you guys have come together to create a show combining your expertise. So, I wanted to start with an easy question for you guys, which is, how are you guys? How do you feel about the upcoming tour?
It's good, and I think it's all places we haven't been before, so it's always nice to open up in virgin territory and show people exactly what the show is. So we're pretty excited. The show's a lot of fun, so we enjoy doing it, and we hope that that sort of excitement sort of carries on into the audience.
What other locations are you guys touring in other than Pittsburgh?
We're going to be going to Washington, D.C., all the way up to Fallsview, which is Niagara Falls in Canada. I mean, we've been doing the show pretty much nonstop for the last few years. We've done 200 cities across North America. We performed in Las Vegas and off-Broadway. So coming to Pittsburgh, looking forward to it.
Fantastic. I'm really interested how you two first met. Who approached who, and how did you work out the kinks of combining improv and hypnotism? I'm sure you get asked this all the time, but
I'll take that one, Colin. So I'm the master hypnotist on the show. I reached out to Colin through his website. His longtime manager, Jeff Andrews, got back in touch. In it, I outlined the concept of blending hypnosis and improv on stage together. And Jeff Andrews, my now partner and Colin's longtime manager, got back in touch and said, this looks like a really interesting idea. So we ended up throwing it up on the main stage of the Second City after the main stage show was completed, just kind of on a whim. And Colin was good enough to try it out with me. And let me tell you, the first show, it was very nerve-wracking. Because, and I don't really go into too much detail about it, because, you know, a lot of these interviews are pretty short, but because we haven't got some time with you, I will tell you, I was so nervous because, you know, you're going up with an improv legend at the Second City, which is like a storied location, and where all the greats have come out of as improvisers. And there's me pitching this idea. I'm not even sure if it's going to work. I don't know if I'm going to be embarrassed in front of the Second City crowd. And Colin was just like a consummate professional. He was just so calm and kind of reassuring and saying, you know what, let's give it a shot and see how it goes. But I will tell you, that first night was nerve-wracking for me.
Yeah, I've tried to find as many clips as I can online about what the show is all about, but what exactly goes down on stage, you know, how is it different from typical improv, maybe, or what has stood out for you guys?
I'll take this question. So I'm the master hypnotist on the show. I bring up 20 volunteers. I hypnotize them, whittle it down to the best subjects, the most responsive subjects. And then Colin Mockery from Whose Line Is It Anyway improvises with the people on stage while they're hypnotized. So that is the main crux of the show. Colin comes out, improvises with these people. He's never met them before. We don't use plants, so we've not prearranged anything with anyone. They're just responding to the suggestions that I give to them. And Colin is creating an instant improv troupe with them. And absolute madness, chaos, hilarity ensues.
Have you found that people tend to be more willing to do stuff when they're under hypnosis?
So the part of the brain that deals with self-reflection becomes disconnected when somebody's hypnotized. So they no longer reflect on their behavior. They just carry out my suggestions without hesitation, without question. First-time improvisers, they'll play to the crowd. They'll look nervous. They'll hesitate. They'll use filler words. These people don't do that. They just jump in and they respond immediately to the suggestions that I give to them, and they're fully committed in the scenes. So it makes for really good improv.
Yeah. Colin, I know Whose Line always had super fast scenes for you. Has hip-rov changed your relationship with improv and like maybe made you slow down a bit or change how you work with doing improv?
Yes, in some ways it did, because, you know, when I'm working with the Whose Line guys or when I'm working with other improvisers around the world with different companies, because we have the same sort of foundation and we're all working towards making a scene together and, you know, working towards an ending, it is kind of more fast-paced and deliberate, or not deliberate, but with the people I'm working with, because I don't know them, I have to sort of actually slow down a bit and go sort of back to my early days in improv, where, okay, I'm focusing on this person, I'm listening to what they're saying, because also I can't go in with any prejudgment, like, oh, this is a perfect setup I've just given them, they're going to take it and go here. They don't do that. They have their own, they just live in the moment we're in right now. They're not looking, oh, if we do this, we can end up in a rocket ship and fly off into space. That'll be the end of the scene. They're just keep going. And it makes it fun for me because I don't, as I say, I can't have any expectations. So I'm truly in the moment with them, truly improvising, going along with whatever they've come up with.
Yeah. So it's just so much more unpredictable than normal
Oh, absolutely. There are times I think, okay, now we're done, we're finished, and then they'll add something where you go, oh, why did you do that? Now that's all right. But yeah, and every night we're just taken by surprise by people, and that's, I think, what makes it really exciting for us.
It's
really about, to Colin's point, it's about ordinary people doing extraordinary things. It's these people who have no acting background, no improv background. They come up on stage, they join Colin, and the superstar of the show, because every night we find one, is battling wits with Colin. It's incredible to watch. I'm even dumbfounded at times and just completely caught off guard throughout the show, because they're giving such incredible, interesting offers, ideas, pushing the scene in different directions that you just wouldn't normally get. It's just, Colin often says words to the effect of, any trained improviser would never come up with that material. Any person who is trained in the art of improv would never have come up with it, because it's so off the wall and so odd and strange and out there.
So when you're hypnotizing these people, do you give them prompts that like prompts them to think along these lines, or does something happen that they're just like all of a sudden like proposing to Colin or like
Yeah, so we get the, so there are games, there's formats wherein we have structure. So, for example, let's say an old-time Western where they're on the run because of something. So, when you watch our Instagram clips, there's not that much context. So, one of the questions coming from. So, there's definitely format to it and game setup, but what occurs inside is all completely improvised, and we have no idea what they're going to say.
So it's kind of like set scene and then they run free, run wild,
It's
whatever.
kind of, it's exactly like Whose Line in that way. All right, you're two people out in outer space. Aliens are attacking. Go. It's just that easy.
It'd be so
Well.
funny if you have like in Whose Line where it was like the top down camera, you have them like wiggling on the floor trying to make it look like they're standing up straight.
We're bringing it in. We got to
Yeah.
do it,
Yeah,
honestly.
let's get that going. Our budget is so big now.
That's for the multi-million dollar game show, Colin. We're
Jeez. Okay.
putting that in. Those were some of the funniest scenes. The ones where they're doing martial arts, hysterical.
What do you think? What is both of your guys's like favorite thing that has happened on stage? Like immediate standout.
I mean, it's so hard because every night there's something, and there's something either takes us by surprise or something. Sometimes it takes place after the show. There was this man who we did an improvised song together, and he was like James Brown. He was like killing it. He was rhyming, making sense, and he sounded amazing. After the show, see him with his family. His entire family is crying. They've never seen him sing, never heard him sing. He's very kind of self-effacing and kind of small. It was just, to me, that just kind of hit home that what Assad does with these people, unlocking the talents that they have that for whatever reason they're keeping hidden.
I think back to a scene, because we've been doing it for so long, 2016, Second City. Colin's doing a tap dance with one of the volunteers, and it's completely improvised and hysterical. I think about that when I think about just things that surprise me and catches me off guard. And the crowd was going absolutely bonkers.
I was 10 years younger, so it was easier. Now I just tap with a cane.
That's still dancing. That's still
Yeah, I
dancing.
guess. I think it is, as long as you're moving to music.
That's amazing that you can just like tap into people's hidden talents. And you know, like 5 years from now, you'll see them. They're going to be like an incredible dancer because they had never known a
Well,
muscle.
it's interesting because we've had people who have done the show. This one lady, she had crippling social anxiety, came up, didn't know why she wanted to volunteer. She volunteers. She becomes a superstar of the show. She's battling wits with Colin on stage. We interview her afterwards. She says, I don't know why I came up. I have crippling social anxiety, but I wanted to give it a shot. And she said, she said she'd been more free than she'd ever been before and that she wanted to explore improv. So I think there is something to it in that you're getting rid of the part of the brain that's saying, you can't do this, you're going to look stupid, you're going to look silly. All that kind of stuff just kind of floats away and they're just free up there. And it's really beautiful to watch. When they're in the zone, it's when I see Colin and we call them hiprovisers, the people who volunteered on stage that are improvising while hypnotized. When they're in the zone, it's like, it's magical on stage. It truly is. It sounds cheesy, but it is beautiful because you're seeing somebody on stage who doesn't have improv background, no acting experience. They're in front of 1,000 people and they're completely free. It's childlike and beautiful to watch.
So, like, how do you know if someone is hypnotizable or not?
Yeah, so I start with 20 volunteers and approximately 20% of the population are going to be good subjects, hypnotic subjects for a stage hypnosis show. So from there, I whittle it down to the best 4 or 5 and then Colin comes out and then improvises with them. And I'm basing it on physiological feedback. So I'm looking for changes in rate and location of respiration. So breathing changes, skin color changes, you go light to dark, dark to light, vasodilation, the capillaries in the eyes become engorged. Slow, sluggish movement, muted voice, mask-like facial expression. So they have a hypnotic mask. So they look like they have a poker face. So I'm looking for all of these physiological signs or indicators. And if I see them, then I'll keep the people on stage that are hypnotized. And then if I don't, then I'll just ask them to leave. And it's kind of like what poker players are looking for when they're trying to get a read, like an unconscious read on or a tell on their opponent. It's same kind of thing. So I'm watching all of them very closely and then determining who's going to be the best candidates.
How long does this take? Do you think I'd be hypnotizable over Zoom?
It takes about five to 10 minutes roughly. And it's very hard to determine until I'm in front of the person. And hypnosis is context driven too, because they've come up on stage, they've decided they want to be hypnotized. So a lot of the really good subjects, believe it or not, hypnotic subjects are already primed. So they already start to exhibit these trance indicators. So they start to look like their eyes start to defocus. They start to exhibit mask-like facial expression. They start to look kind of tranced out when they come up on stage. So they're already kind of primed. And if you pay attention, you can even notice when you talk to people, you can see when people start to go into trances because their eyes defocus. They start looking, they're not really looking at you. They're looking kind of through you and they look like they're not paying attention. That's kind of what I'm looking for when I'm looking for a good subject on stage, somebody who's not paying attention. So, you know, I'm saying this obviously tongue in cheek, but you kind of get a sense of it, yeah. Right? Sort of tell when people start to look like they're in another place.
Interesting. Colin, have you ever been hypnotized by
People keep pushing us to do it. So Asad hypnotized me and it's incredibly relaxing. And you know, part of the fun of this show, I'm going to say fun, I don't know if that's the right word, but we have these two art forms that people are always doubting. All through the Who's Line years, I would have people say, you know, I saw you reading cue cards. I was like, really? Okay. Then transcribe that scene, read it back, and see if it makes any sense whatsoever. And it's the same with hypnosis. People, for whatever reason, just have a high level of skepticism. And that's what's great about this show, especially for family members or people who know the subjects. They are certainly seeing that it truly is something that works. And I hope it dispels a lot of the sort of the myths about hypnotism. Everything you see on movies and television tend not to be truly connected to the world. These people aren't they haven't lost who they are. They're still the same people. They're aware the entire time. They just don't have that part of the of their brain that says you can't do this. You're going to embarrass yourself. They just have complete freedom.
It's like people think someone's going to pull out a Queen of Hearts and something crazy is going to happen. There,
we definitely are on the fun light side of the hypnosis, not on the clinical application. Let's put it that
way. Yeah.
I will say that people who are brought up are treated very safely. Assad is very careful with them, making sure that, you know, they're in a safe spot and that everything is good. When I'm improvising, I'm trying to make sure that, as I would treat any improviser. So, you know, we're not making fun of them, making them cluck like chickens or bark like dogs or doing anything embarrassing, have them take off their clothes. They're just your basic improv troupe that we're having fun with.
The old version, because there's people who are listening to this and have seen the, you know, bark like a dog, cluck like a chicken hypnosis shows. That's not this show. For the crescendo of the show, I'll give you an example. Colin is a detective solving a case. He gets the information from the audience about what the case is about. He improvises the case completely on stage. And then one of the volunteers plays all the different characters that Colin comes into contact with while solving the case. So he might come into a contact with a femme fatale. He may come into contact with the chief of police. And they're changing and morphing into the different characters. So it's very much elevated. When we performed off-Broadway, we were covered by the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Time Out, New Yorker. And we were actually nominated by the Off-Broadway Alliance Awards for most unique theatrical experience. So it's very much theater.
Yeah. I read those articles, and I also found some like personal experiences that people were posting online and stuff. And it just really seemed like if someone wasn't uncomfortable, they were able to sit back down and eventually be guided out of the hypnotic state if they didn't want to be there. And
yeah, you could get stuck in hypnosis. So that's one thing a lot of people talk about is, oh, what, you know, what would happen if, you know, the hypnotist dropped dead, you know, what mid show, right?
That would be
great. It was Dr. Orney that ran the experiments, and I believe it was Harvard. They hypnotized first year psychology students, turned off all the lights, left the lecture hall, 5 to 15 minutes, all of them would come out of the hypnosis. And that experiment's been replicated many times. You're not asleep when you're hypnotized, although the Greek god of sleep, fun fact, is named Hypnos, I should say. But you're not asleep when you're hypnotized. You're aware of what's going on. You're hearing the sound of my voice at all times. Physiologically, you look asleep. So because your body's really relaxed, but you are not asleep. So you're aware of what's happening at all times. You can't be made to do anything that you don't want to do when you're hypnotized. You can be made to do things that you normally wouldn't do. So that's the distinction for when it comes to stage hypnosis. And when people come up on stage, they have already given tacit permission. They are there to experience the hypnosis. And then they really do have these tremendous experiences. The best way to describe hypnosis would be watching a movie, getting so caught up in what you're watching that you're moved to a physiological response. So that would be the best way to describe a hypnotic trance state. So you watch a horror movie, you get caught up, your palms start to sweat, your heart starts to race. Logically, you know what you're watching on the big screen is not real, but for that moment in time, and during that scary scene, you think it's really real. Or you watch a tearjerker and you start to cry. Logically, you know that, you know, the person who's on the big screen's not actually dying. You know, it's not Leonardo DiCaprio going down with the ship. It's actually it's not Jack going down. It's Leonardo DiCaprio who's acting, and, you know, he's dating models in Hollywood, making millions of dollars, right? So he's doing just fine. But for that moment in time, you're really, really, really so dialed in that you get that emotional response. So because you're so fully immersed in the movie, and that's the best way to describe what occurs up on stage when somebody's hypnotized.
Because he could have fit on that door.
Could have easily.
Easily.
Just push her off. Get on.
Oh, yeah, or that. Like, but yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So kind of veering away, I'm curious if you guys have any tips for someone maybe wanting to get into improv, going like, cause this is a totally different show, maybe taking a different approach, or would you want them to start out, you know, just doing typical improv? Or
I say to, first of all, if you're looking to do improv as a career, I always say, if there's anything else you love, do that instead. You know, it's great. We were, everyone on Whose Line, incredibly fortunate that the show came from Britain to showcase the one thing we do well. But I also say, take improv classes. It is a great life skill to have, to learn how to listen to people, to learn how not to prejudge situations. And if you decide to do it as a profession, just keep doing it. And so many people who have started doing that have branched off into coming up with different ways of doing improv. You know, like Asad coming up with this particular brand. People, I have a friend who he started Dungeons and Dragons improv shows, where the characters from Dungeons and Dragons, and there's a dungeon master who sort of guides them through an improv adventure. Then there's like one act plays that people have improvised based on a certain playwright like Shakespeare or Chekhov. So you can do so much with improv. Not only on stage, but in life. So I always encourage people to do it. It's a great skill.
What is the industry like the performance industry or touring?
It's horrible. You know, there's a lot of people out there, incredibly talented people who, you know, either can't get a break. And there's a lot of talented people who are working right now, you know, we're lucky we've come up with this sort of, you know, I don't think there's any other improv hypnosis shows out there. So good on us. You have to find your place in there. But it's a hard business. It's a hard business because, you know, you can't show your resume and go, here's what I can do. I can build a house in 3 days. It's like, here, I make up stuff. It's pretty hard to find a job that you know, fits. And, it, you know, you're based on your appearance a lot of the time. I know so many incredibly talented people who just haven't had that break yet. But, you know, when you're in this business, it's a business of dreams. And everything can change overnight. You can go from, you know, Wayne Brady was a Tigger at Disney World, and then he got Whose Line. I don't think he went back to Tigger. It's worked out nicely for him.
Yeah. Crazy. How do you both see hip-prov?
Oh, man. Well, yeah, Asad has viciously berated people for less than that.
How do you both see hip-prov moving forward in the future? Do you think you'll add changes or maybe add people?
So I will tell you that we just sold Hip-Prov to a major Canadian streamer in Canada. We've licensed the show there. We shot a special, and now Canadian viewers can watch the show. I think the next step is to have it streaming in the United States. So that would be the next step, and then global, because we'd love to bring Hip-Prov to the masses.
Yeah, but also it would be great if we could, you know, every country have a Hip-Prov with a local improviser, a local hypnotist, speaking in their own language, doing whatever they do, and while we rake in the money. That's my dream. Asad, he's very, you know, he's noble and he has better, you know, he wants to make mankind better. I just want to add an addition to my house.
Are you guys doing anything in addition to Hip-Prov right now? Or is that like your both main focus right now?
I have an album out with Rufus Wainwright. It's entitled An Exploration of Hypnotic Sound. It actually features John Hilson, who is an incredible musician who plays improvised music with us throughout the show. He's our musical director, incredible keyboardist. So definitely someone to watch as well. His name is, again, John Hilson. He's part of the album.
Yeah, I do stuff. There's a TV show called Murdoch Mysteries. I think it's sometimes it's I'm a semi-regular as a serial killer, so I think I may be coming back for a bit, and then something always pops. I was out for my mother's 90th birthday in Vancouver. Ended up doing a horror movie for a couple of days in the interior of BC, which was a lot of fun. Spoiler alert, I didn't make it.
No.
Yeah.
So first you were a serial killer.
And then I got my comeuppance on another project.
Yeah, and then you got serial killed.
That's karma.
Is there anything else you guys want to say to our audience before we sign off?
Sure. So I think the show is fast-paced. Hip-hop is fast-paced. It's action-packed, high energy, and hilarious, because we've got Colin Mochrie from Whose Line Is It Anyway improvising with people he's never met before who are hypnotized.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And it's family-friendly. You have to be 18 or over to be hypnotized, but we have kids come to the show. They really enjoy it. They love seeing adults be goofy.
So the kids can't be hypnotized?
We just asked for 18 and up.
Apparently there's laws. Oh, well. So my idea of like 12-year-old butlers is no longer relevant.
It's been super great chatting with you guys.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's been really great. All right. Well, this has been Aubrey on a Bench with Colin Mochrie and Asad Meki. Thank you guys again so much.
Thank you.
But yeah, your show, Hip-Rof, will be at Carnegie at Homestead, I believe?
I believe so.
On November 9th.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house! Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
This is a very unique tape. It is a tape that is based upon revealing some things that have been held secret for centuries. Manage the coincidences of your life. 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 Manage.
And the winner, and the winner. A certain style smiles.
Choke, and this is the holiday edition of the Chopping Channel, World Music World. We're bringing you the most affordable gift of music you can't buy enough of. And I'm putting the biggest possible smile on my voice. The Chopping Channel has all the most desirable chopped and channeled music available today, and it's all discounted by our cashiers and critics alike. More music in less time is our motto here at the Chopping Channel. And if you don't have the time, we've got the music for you. And if you can't be sure, we can. All Chopping Channel music sales are as final as a rogue nuke. No refunds, no returns, and no questions asked. Nope, nothing to complain about here. Hell, this is pure entertainment. And it's all as legal as the internet, so you know it's safe. Now, let's hear some of that Chopping Channel music. Let me introduce our salespeople tonight. Help Suit, Man from the World, and Peter Brownwater are all here live to let you know about some of those fabulous bargains.
You are listening to Wound Liquor with Dr. Anomia on WRCT 88.3 FM in the Pittsburgh area and surroundings. Also, WRCT.org throughout the universe.
It's Dr. Nomia, and this is Wound Liquor, and welcome again, and I'm very happy to be here with you, and, you know, we're going to look at this whole matter of concern to me, and that is the smile. And the title of this installment is Smile Munch. And let me tell you outright, well, let me ask you outright, would anybody be inclined to call you smiley? And would they also comment and compliment you by saying that you have a wonderful, room enchanting, contenting smile? Baby, I mean, I've seen a lot of people with that kind of infectiously happy smiling. You know, I mean, it just makes you feel uplifted, and you know, it just is such a nice and welcoming and warm and all those good superlatives that accompany that smile. But I'm afraid not for me. Never not for me. As a kid, I had that hard smile that, you know, like, I mean, you're around 6 or 7 and you're rather toothless, well, toothless completely, but missing teeth, and it's kind of cute, and you know, all the immature muscles in your face are being activated, and it looks like a really hard smile. Now, I have to make a distinction. That is cute and funny, and, you know, kids outgrow that. I never did. And it wasn't so cute when I did that. In fact, it was a little frightening. Now, I mean, I still cannot smile without it looking like it is a terrible strain. And, you know, thinking about how the muscle tone is just like a little too spastic, a lot going on there. And it's not a very welcoming smile. It's not a beacon of comfort and contentment. It just looks really odd. It looks, well, let me tell you, it looks a little bit, well, it looks a lot like the Grinch smiling. I mean, there's something just sinister or off or goofy, but not in a good, fun-loving, backslap, hey, you're one of us kind of way. No. No, and I mean, there's also a good image comparison with a possum that's just fed a lot of garbage and is, like, really happy, but also busted, you know, in that flashlight. I mean, there's that really weird grin. Now, if I can gild the lily, so to speak, more, let me tell you how I really looked as a kid smiling. This is a much better comparison. If you know that classic first talkie movie, I think it was the first talkie, not so silent film, I think it was 1928, by director Paul Lenny. Called The Man Who Laughs with Conrad Veidt. You know, that, well, it's like the story of this guy who was disfigured by a king, and he had this horrible, toothy smile. I mean, it was just extremis. That's kind of in the ballpark of what I look like as a kid smiling. And not so much now, because age has sort of kind of added skin-wrinkled curtains around my mouth. And so it doesn't have that look of austere, phosphorescent, toothy smiling. I mean, you know, people who have beautiful smiles, perfect teeth, perfect white teeth, you know, I mean, it is a joy to behold. And maybe you're like that too, or maybe you're not, but still, you're not malformed, and your face is expressive of a very benign and lovely smile. Not so me. Again, not so me. I'm not feeling sorry for myself. It isn't anything like that at all. You know, it's just that you will note in photos, I don't smile. I really don't, because it's frightening. It looks crazy. And I'll tell you something that also chimes in with this. That whole history of clowns, when it became a thing, because they had certain tertiary syphilitic people who had, I think their lips had just shrunken, and they had expressive like grotesque smiles, little shock of hair on their heads, and you know, people would parade them around to sick beds, especially for children. Can you imagine? To cheer them up. And that's how clowns came to be. Now, in time, you had people who were disfigured or who were born with no lips and had trouble in normal society. And you would have these, these circus, I don't know if they were circus types, you didn't have that back then, but, you know, these entrepreneurs, these dark entrepreneurs that would make a buck by getting these unfortunates to act like clowns in hospitals, or what was then hospitals, and primarily sick beds for a certain fee. And in time, they would not lipstick, but like quicksilver, mercury. They would use mercury to accent their lipless mouths, and of course to frame the teeth, and then arsenic makeup, like white, okay, to make them very funny looking. Yeah, really funny looking, right? Frightening. And, you know, this whole thing about like carrying skulls, you know, you equate with Halloween, that wasn't the case at all, because the skull had that same toothy look and no lips, and people thought it was amusing. They would take those if they were poorer and couldn't afford, I don't even know how much, you know, a farthing, I don't know. Just funny to say farthing, isn't it? And, you know, we'll take that. They take a human skull, paint it, accent the lips or the liplessness, and try to amuse the sick child with influenza or dying from TB. Think about it. All right, so I hope you are smiley. Take the fact that you can smile. We move on.
Now, smile.
Happy smile.
smile.